Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. You are listening to Voices for Justice this evening, November 25th, 2009. I'm your host, Michelle Barr, and tonight's show, Authors Who Make an Impact. We're going to introduce you to some wonderful, talented, creative, and passionate writers who are making a difference through words and their stories. The song you were just hearing is from songwriter Michelle Weiss, and it's called It's About All of Us, and you can find her link on our site as well. Our panel will be taking your calls in a little while. The call-in number is 347-838-8622. And please remember to lower your speakers and background noise so we can hear you and your question. And the chat room is also open. Join us by logging on to blogtalkradio.com/ Helping Heroes. Before we begin, I just want to remind everyone, first of all, happy Thanksgiving. And as we enjoy Thanksgiving tomorrow with our families and friends, in the evening, CNN will celebrate everyday heroes, everyday common folks lending a helping hand in their communities to make a difference in the world. So please check your local listings for the times. The show is called CNN Heroes, and of course it will air on CNN. And one of those CNN heroes, we are so honored, she will be with us in a few minutes, CNN hero back in 2007. She's also an inductee into the Hall of Fame for Caring Americans, and she's a black belt. Dallas Jessup is a Vanderbilt University's youngest freshman at the age of 17, and she can also add award-winning author to her resume. Her new book, Young Revolutionaries Who Rock, An Insider's Guide to Saving the World, One Revolution at a Time, shot up charts following its launch on the Today Show and Fox and Friends. Dallas was also referenced as the leading voice of the next great generation for the growing community service project to fight predators that was called Just Yell Fire. She made that into a nonprofit, and she'll be with us shortly. Hoda Kotb from the Today Show also stated, and Dallas is an inspiration to kids and grown-ups too. Dallas is a shining light on other kids who are doing great things. So Dallas will be with us shortly. Another hero that's going to be joining us is Dr. Brian Kinnard. He's an internationally recognized author in the fields of social psychology and criminal justice. He is a former Kansas law enforcement officer and served as professor and department chair of criminal justice at Fort Hays State University. One of his colleagues quoted him, "It's easy to dismiss heroes. It's a lot harder to be one." Brian's wonderful book explores the relationship between fascination with superheroes and the real ones who patrol the streets. Brian is a teacher, trainer, and law enforcement enthusiast, and this hero will be with us shortly as well. Diane Chamberlain is the best-selling author of 18 novels. Her books, frequently set in the southeastern United States, are complex stories about love, compassion, and forgiveness with a touch of mystery and suspense. It's been quoted as saying, "Breaking the silence, Chamberlain deserves the highest praise for writing this emotionally compelling story of secrets and silence, love and lies. Breaking the silence is as real and emotional as a novel can be. Also, Diane was diagnosed years ago with rheumatoid arthritis, which changes the way she works. And we both have that in common with rheumatoid arthritis. But she sometimes uses a voice recognition software in order to complete these award-winning novels. So we'll hear from Diane shortly. And our other panelist tonight is Maggie Jessup. Fame 101, her new book. Fame 101 is the sexiest nonfiction book for 2010. It's real power and precisely how to get it. Maggie co-founded Platform Strategy, a publicity and brand strategy firm, in 2002. And if her name sounds familiar, she is the proud mother of our other panelists, Dallas Jessup. And Maggie's pioneering work in personal brand strategy has made her a leader in this field and one of the country's most in-demand consultants. In her new book, Fame 101, Maggie knows Martha Stewart, Barack Obama, Susie Orman. She knows what these folks all have in common. They understand fame and how to keep it, and most importantly, how to capitalize on it. And tonight, we're going to hear from all of these heroes in journalism, all of these heroes in being authors, and all of these heroes for making a difference in their words. Hello, everyone. Are you all with us?
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Diane. Hi, Brian. Dallas. Is Maggie on as well?
I'm here.
Okay. Well, welcome to Voices for Justice, everyone. Most all of you know that I own a company called Helping Heroes, so this is so apropos this evening, especially with the fact that tomorrow night we all give thanks around the world for what we do have in our world and what we have in our lives. And CNN will also be hosting their annual show, CNN Heroes, and all of you, in your writings and in your works, you're a hero to those that read them. And so we thank you for being with us this evening.
Thanks for having
us. I wanted to start with, let's start with Dallas for a little bit. 17 years old, you know, we have a lot of wonderful writers on the air tonight, and they've been doing it for many years. But 17 years old, Dallas, I'm exhausted reading your resume. You've already had an award-winning movie turned into a nonprofit, and you have your book out, and you've been through 45 countries. You know, how do you manage to do so much and still be a student at Vanderbilt?
Well, it definitely is hard juggling everything, but when you're so passionate, I'm really angry about the injustice against girls of date rape and violence and abduction, that there's no way I can't dedicate my time to help causing. If there's something I can do to make a difference and to save girls' lives out there, I have no other choice but to make time to do what I can.
What would you say to those that, you know, are in your age bracket that say, oh, I just don't have the time, I'm too young to do that? Any advice for them?
I think that's a complete fallacy. There is no better time than right now, especially being a young adult. I mean, right now we have no responsibilities. We don't have to work, in an essence. We don't have a family to raise. And we don't have all these limitations that you get as you get older, that you really have all the resources out there. And there's nothing more that adults love than to help a young kid making a difference. So really, as a young adult, you have the world at your hands that you can make a difference with. And there's no reason that we shouldn't all as my generation be take advantage of that.
Those are some powerful words. Maggie, this is your daughter we're speaking to here. Obviously, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree in your family of a lot of writers and publicists. Do you say the same thing to the younger generation? Do you represent anyone that, you know, is of Dallas's age bracket, or?
Well, most of my people are in the business world. I have doctors and lawyers and all this. And when Dallas started all of this, I was amazed at first at her idea of going after this, because when we see these things happen as parents, when we see girls being abducted and raped and killed all over this country or disappearing for 18 years or whatever it is, our heart breaks for that family. We say a little prayer saying, thank God it's not my kid, but then we go on. Dallas saw something, and she said, I can fix that. I can make a difference. And she went on. So I just said, I will take you on as my pro bono client. I mean, if you're willing to do the work. So, I mean, she's my kid, but she works very, very hard, and I'm amazed every day. For the longest time, I thought my child was so, I mean, she is. I thought my child was so special, and there's no other one out there like that. But as she would go and win these awards, we would meet other kids that are just doing incredible work, from building schools in India and cleaning up women's shelters in Ohio and feeding children in Minnesota. And, I mean, and these are kids.
Definitely,
the kids out
definitely.
There today are just amazing.
They are amazing, and many of them would think that, you know, at 17, you know, I have an obstacle here of my age. But, Diane, your characters have many obstacles to overcome, and I know you and I have spoken about our arthritis and such, and how do you bring that to light and make us believe in what we're reading about?
Well, I think my background is as a clinical social worker, and I think that really has helped me understand how people tick, and it's really helped me with creating characters who I hope are believable and sympathetic. And I was very interested in what you were talking about with Dallas and Maggie, because in my two recent novels, Before the Storm and Secrets She Left Behind, the teenage characters are the most significant characters. And what they go through, one of them has fetal alcohol syndrome, one of them is badly burned, another one goes to great lengths to please her boyfriend. And what they go through is, it makes me really appreciate the work that Dallas is doing, because teenagers really have so many obstacles in front of them, and they can be so easily led astray that it's really important that we advocate for them, and I try to do that through my fiction, the way Dallas is doing it with her nonfiction.
That's Brian, in regards to your recent book, are all of your books, animated? I'm trying to think of the universe about it. Because when I saw your book, I've never read a cartoon. I've never read, you know, any of those type of comic superhero kind of things before. And one would say, well, maybe your clientele and readers are, you know, Dallas's age. But then when you read it, it's almost as if, wow, you know, you can actually get your point across to adults that are reading your books, which ultimately brings them back to a younger generation when we all did read comics and cartoons. What was
so what
the
you're saying is that you've
that,
never had a favorite, huh?
Say that again.
So what you're saying is you've never had a favorite, huh?
I always liked Superman, you know, for the most part, that's probably, and Shazam, you know, one comic that I used to enjoy. But for the most part, I just never got into them, and I would have never in a million years thought you could actually get your point across in a comic book sense of style as you have with your book. And
well,
I find
it
very
interesting. you know, a lot of people will pass it off as childish, but, you know, you kind of have to remember the story of Peter Pan. You remember his power of unending youth. I mean, the boy would never grow up. And I'm not talking about that careless or naive sense as we all are as youth, but really talking about regaining a sense of pure idealism and passion and creativity, you know, that more or less gets whacked out of us as we grow to adulthood. So superheroes have been around, pop culture, comic book superheroes have been around for well over 80 years. And they've really become our modern mythology as far as heroism, because there is absolutely a psychological power in the characters that appeal to people. Now, we know that because, I mean, we have 62 million comics sold each year. We have billions of dollars in sales and toys. And let's not forget the last 20 years of movies that are hitting the big screens, and people are flocking to it. So it's certainly always been an outlet for fantasy and escapism. But, you know, what I'm doing here with the book is trying to tie that very pure essence of heroism to what our folks in the criminal justice field and our public safety professions do, just as much as what you and I and every other ordinary citizen does every day. Because, you know, there are certainly opportunities in all of our lives to be heroic and to have that positive impact on people, and we certainly have folks here on this panel that do that.
Definitely. So with this book, you know, what is the parallel universe about how you come to write about it? Is it from your, you know, years in law enforcement, or...
Well, there's really no well-defined job description for law enforcement or for a law enforcement officer. So a superheroic profession really calls for some, you know, creative interpretation. I had come into the law enforcement profession with a relatively stamped set of moral conditions, and things I saw in my first few years on the job led to disgust and disappointment. I mean, you know, domestic violence, sexual abuse, drunkenness, you know, all of these things are demons hidden behind closed doors in a facade of neighborly interaction. And more than just experiencing the worst of society, it was equally disheartening just to see people who made a choice, you know, of self-destruction. And so when the gap widened between the world I worked in and that world presented to me by my upbringing, I would always resort to superhero themes, because the idea of goodness and justice afforded to me by my heroes like Superman or Captain America, it provided a world where morality worked like it was supposed to. And it certainly sparked old fantasies and kind of offered me a spiritual renewal to tackle that ugliness that was my stomping grounds, and that is a stomping grounds for all of us.
You mentioned some of the issues that you saw in the field which drew your attention to possibly writing about it. Dallas, you kind of did the same thing, which brought you to do the movie and which ultimately became your nonprofit, Just Yell Fire. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about why and how that came to be?
Of course. Well, as you said earlier, I have a black belt in Taekwondo, and I'm a second degree in Filipino street fighting. And my freshman year in high school, I saw the video footage of Carly Brucia, who was a girl in Florida. In essence, man came up to her and said something, and she went away with him willingly. And then 4 days later, they found her body. And I watched that going, that didn't have to happen to her. She could still be alive, and she could be at home with her mom right now. And so kind of from that moment, I decided that I wanted to help girls learn how to defend themselves, at least be able to get away from an attack situation. And my mother, being my mother, said, make a learning experience of it and take a script writing class. So I took a local script writing class at a community college, and the professor loved it so much that he passed it around to his friends in the industry, and from there got a professional crew of 30. We got 100 extras, and even Evangeline Lilly and Josh Holloway from ABC's Lost jumped on to help out with the cause, and it just kind of snowballed from there into what it is today.
So you said you, with the black belt and all, what is your favorite self-defense move? So I know to prevent myself from ever being in a situation where you have to use it.
Well, definitely one of the most effective is the ear pull, which merely you grab onto someone's ear and rip it off. It takes 7 to 10 pounds of pressure to rip or tear an ear off, depending on how and what part of the ear you grab. And it's very effective. It also allows there to be blood on your fingers, which allows the police, FBI, whoever is getting involved in your crime investigation to be able to attach the DNA to the attacker and track him down.
Now, do you know if your movie has ever helped in a situation in regards to that?
We have definitely heard from several girls who have gotten away. We recently heard from a girl in Seattle, Washington, who was she's a seventh grader, was walking home through a dark alley, which she unfortunately had to go home through, and a man came up to her, and just as in the film, asked her what time it is. He grabbed her. She thankfully had watched the film 3 months earlier, remembered to go for the eyes, the ears, and the groin, yelled fire, and was able to go home that night. And we've heard other stories like that. And it's a really rewarding experience and an inspiration to keep doing what I do, to hear from girls who have been able to get away and avoid tragic situations.
That would definitely make me want to keep doing it. That's probably the biggest compliment you can receive, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, not only just girls fighting back, but girls getting back self-esteem, or even adults getting back self-esteem. We receive anywhere from 8 to over 800 emails a day from parents and teachers and girls who either watched the film and avoided it, or a mother who was raped when she's a child but now has been able to show her daughter the film and knows she won't have the same outcome as her. And it's a really rewarding experience to know you have an impact on other people's lives for the better.
Definitely. Now, Diane, with your book, Breaking the Silence, can you describe a little bit about the new novel?
Sure. Breaking the Silence is, like all of my books, it's part suspense and part mystery and 100% family drama. it's very complex. The threads seem unrelated at first, but they will gradually fit together. And it involves the CIA mind control experiments that took place here in the United States and in Canada in the 1950s and the 1960s. But it's also current day. It's about an elderly woman with Alzheimer's and a young woman's father on his deathbed asks the young woman to take care of this elderly woman after he's gone, and she has no idea who this woman is. So she gradually comes to know the woman, and at the same time, her 5-year-old daughter stops speaking, and her husband commits suicide, and everything is ultimately linked together, but it takes a long time and a lot of twists and turns to figure out what's really going on.
Now, you mentioned that you use your social worker background and psychotherapist background to influence your writing. Do you ever speak to folks in law enforcement or in the public on, you know, their family, you know, dramas and things of that nature to also draw from that?
Well, you know, I used to do that professionally as a social worker. But these days, I speak to people in law enforcement more as I do my research, because I need to understand how the law enforcement officers would deal with certain situations that come up in my novels. So I've sort of switched roles in terms of how I talk with the experts. Now I'm usually pumping them for more information than I'm giving them.
For more information, Brian, on your book, how can the officers and people in general find their heroic, impulses?
How do they find their heroic impulse? There's basically, you know, 3, 4, 5 things you can look at. Number one, become part of something bigger than yourself or other than yourself. Quit looking at the world through a scientific lens. You know, so many times we use rationality, reason, and logic, and you absolutely cannot explain questions and matters of self, you know, with science. And so self-exploration is quite metaphysical. And, you know, we're socialized for the most part to be mediocre. You know, we fear our greatness, so we choose not to be great. So it's very important to surround yourselves with appropriate role models and mentors. And then probably finding who you are in your interactions. I mean, how am I related to the possible set of meanings that can be used to structure my world and experiences? And so if you look back at all of your jobs, your relationships, there's common themes and patterns. And so the idea is to take those good things, harness them, and really use them.
Fantastic. Folks listening, I just want to remind you that the call-in number is 347-838-8622.
If you have a question, feel free and call in. And we'll also be giving a couple books away in the next couple of days. For those that have called in, you'll be entered into the drawing. So please take a look at their websites also. If you go to blogtalkradio.com/helpingheroes, all of tonight's panel are listed under authors. And if you click on their links, these books will make a great holiday gift. So no need to stand in line Friday morning. You can get them today. Maggie, listening to the panel tonight, you know, you brand folks, Fame 101, you know, we all know sometimes fame comes with a price tag. But how do you capitalize on it, and how do you keep it in a positive mode?
Okay, we're not talking, this book is not talking about the kind of fame that you get with Paris Hilton and Lindsay Lohan. This is talking about fame, the good kind, the kind that gets attention, especially if you're talking nonprofits. I mean, the book isn't geared completely towards nonprofits, but we use the same formula that we used with Just Yell Fire for Dallas. And Just Yell Fire has been on Good Morning America, The Today Show twice, People Magazine, In Touch Weekly, Montel, Fox and Friends, Fox News, CNN, I mean, on and on and on, USA Today, everything local, cable, regional, national, in several different countries. And the formula for that is, I mean, one, you have to brand yourself. There has to be a brand. It cannot just be jack of all trades, we do anything and everything. There has to be a focus. And once you get that focus, you have to have certain elements. So what you do is you combine, there's a formula that you learn exactly how to combine personal branding or your corporate branding or your nonprofit branding with publicity, and then go out and sell that to the market. Then you market it. And you have to have certain tools. You have to have a media kit. If you call the Ellen Show and say, oh, I have this wonderful thing, they say, send me your media kit. And if you sit there going, sure, it takes you 3 or 4 weeks to put one together. By then, you're done. You're not professional enough. See you later. So you have to have all these things in place. You have to have a great website. And the website has certain elements to it and certain pages. And you have to make if somebody wants to do a story about you, if somebody decides, yes, this is a good entity and I do want to cover it, you have to make it as easy as possible for them to get pictures so they're going to be in your media room. You have to have the media kit ready. You have to have bios and quotes and everything ready to hand to them so they don't have to work that hard to help you. And then there's also, it discusses the difference between advertising and publicity. Huge difference, and people don't seem to get that. And a lot of times they write press releases to read like ads, and they should be writing them to read like copy that a newspaper or a news person would use. And they have to understand that these shows like Good Morning America and Today Show and The View and all of those are not, they don't care about you or your book. They care about their audience and what value they can bring to their audience. So
I think a lot of people, mistake that when they're going out and trying to get publicity for themselves. Or in some cases, like I deal with missing children, families think that the media is there to help them. And many of the times, a lot of these shows, you're right, they do care, but they also care that, oh, this particular story is going to keep our viewers. And so
exactly,
they keep running it, and folks don't understand that, certain shows, you really ought to not go on, and things of that nature. So it helps to have a good publicist like yourself that know those strategies in order to be more of a support than a hindrance.
Oh, there's definitely shows you shouldn't go on. I know the Howard Stern Show tried to get Dallas on there. This is a national show. I just went.
I'm
said
sorry.
Exactly.
I'm glad you're her mother.
I said, I don't think so. It's not going to happen. So you have to know your audience.
Do you know who your audience is?
Oh, definitely. My audience is primarily women, but women of all ages, from
13 to, 103. But I have some male readers, and particularly with the new book, Breaking the Silence, because of the secret CIA mind control experiments, that seems to be bringing in a bigger male readership than I'm accustomed to, and I welcome them.
Are those CIA agents in your book male or female?
Actually, it's not an agent. This is based on fact, on something that happened in the 1950s and 60s and that I hope will not happen again, when our government was concerned that the communists were perfecting brainwashing techniques, and so we had a covert program to try to compete against their program, and we used psychiatric patients who were obviously involuntary as the guinea pigs. So it was a physician who was in charge of the psychiatric portion of that program, and I've created a fictional physician to stand in his stead in my book.
Interesting. Brian, on your book, do you know basically the age group of your readership?
Well, I mean, we really have readers from all walks of life. I mean, cops and public safety professionals are my central thesis, but the implications of heroism and its relationship to symbols of justice and good, are much more far-ranging than that. So I've seen a certain degree of success, with both males and females from 15 all the way up to 80.
What made you veer from the psychology and criminal justice aspect to writing, novels and books of this nature?
Well, I think I used the very interdisciplinary scope of my education and experiences as a springboard for this particular work. A lot of my previous work has been, as a research scientist, it's always got that scientific spin, and so this is more of a personal exploration, one of those examinations of self, and so there's certainly an existential theme that permeates this book at large, and of course, that's why it's my favorite.
What's the website folks can go to is watchmanbooks.com, is that correct?
That's right, watchmanbooks, watchmanbooks.com.
Okay, and for Maggie, platformstrategy.com, you can find out a little bit more about her company, and I highly suggest if any of the panel tonight would like to get to know Maggie to go to her website as well. And for Dallas, it's justyellfire.org, or you can also try dallasjessup.com. And for Diane, which website were
Diane
you using?
Chamberlain, DianeChamberlain.com.
Okay. .com. And again, all of those are listed on the website. If you would like to go there, their books are for sale. What is the best advice for anyone who wants to get involved in the community service aspect, Dallas, that, if they're sitting at home and they want to make a difference, how do you encourage them to just get up and do that?
Well, I think the first thing I encourage everyone to do is, one, find what injustice makes you angry and what you love to do, and find a way to combine it. Because when you are really angry at something and you love doing something else and you combine them, there's no way you can't do it. If you love baking and feel bad about kids who can't be fed, find a way to combine that. If you are angry that kids aren't getting an education in South India and you can start a school there, start a school there. I mean, there's so many ways to combine what you love to do and what injustice makes you angry that there's no reason not to. Just take that step and don't be afraid to do it, because you're going to succeed as long as you keep trying.
Have you had any challenges with where your focus point is for the future, or what you've had to overcome in order to get where you're at today?
As for the future, there's so far no major obstacles. As in general, I mean, the one major obstacle I have to face every day is the fact that the there's so many predators out there and so many bad guys that how on earth do you take on every single one? And I think just keep going at it and making sure that every day I work to make sure that more girls know are aware about it and know how to defend themselves is one thing I can do for that. And so I think always not being understanding the whole problem but not letting the whole problem overwhelm you to where you do nothing is really important.
Some good advice. Brian, just a little bit in reference to your nominee for an award coming up in 2010, is that correct?
Correct, Pulitzer Prize in Letters.
Is there any place that folks can learn a little bit more about that information, or would that be your website?
Well, that would be my website, yeah, watchmanbooks.com. Of course, you can also go to the Pulitzer website at pulitzer.org.
Congratulations on that. Any last comments in regards to the book or any of your – what do you have in the future in store?
Well, I tell you what, interestingly enough, Dallas just made a point that strikingly clear that I was going to visit about is just – superheroes and heroes in general teach us that we can and should risk our lives on an impossible cause. I know with criminal justice, there's no completion, there's no proper ending or salvation, but only a reappraisal of our choices to protect and serve. And I really can't emphasize that enough.
Some good points. Do you have anything in the works besides the award coming up in 2010? Any new books on the horizon?
Well, pretty much, yes. I have my fourth book just almost completed. I'm taking a look at some semiotics and symbolic solutions. More or less, without symbols, we'd have a very difficult time sustaining faith and idealism in something. We've always excelled because we've made one thing stand for another, such as an American flag or the scales of justice or a police uniform. So when our literal world fails us, we turn to symbolic solutions as a relevant and contemporary beacon for inspiration and hope, and see where that takes me.
Any obstacles that you had to overcome in order to get to where your passion is obviously at right now in reference to your writings?
Well, I don't know. Maybe to also reference what Dallas has said earlier about being angry. I spent 10 years in a pretty nasty profession, much like I mentioned earlier about seeing a lot of the ugly side of life. And when you sit down and you start thinking about that, every situation you experience is cataloged into the brain, and you don't let go of it. And when you see death, when you see destruction, it becomes salient. And, to be able to sit down and actually – it really became a spiritual therapy session. And so that was really able to drive me, and of course I've always been able to, articulate my thoughts very well on paper. It was just a matter of trying to organize my thoughts, be angry about that, put it down on paper, and make some logical comparisons based on, both the metaphysical world as well as the scientific world.
To all of our panel, like Dallas was saying, you get angry about something and you want to do something about it and you're able to put it to paper and write about it. How do you go about doing that? I mean, I write press releases all day long and media packets, but, dealing with a lot of the cases I've had to deal with missing children and kidnapped and abducted either adults and children, where do you start? For somebody that's sitting at home saying, I'm ticked off about human trafficking, how can I write about it?
If you want to write about it, in Fame 101 we do have a little formula that we use, and we use this with all of our clients. There's a very, very easy way to write a book. Get a little MP3 player and say you are worried about, you're upset about human trafficking. Interview people. Or study. And, we have a scientist, and he's saying, yeah, I just don't have time. I'm saying, well, tell me a little bit about this. And he talked to me for 20 minutes explaining just one small aspect of the science he does. I said, now, if you would have just recorded that, you would have a chapter. Interview yourself, interview other people, and you have a book. You know, if you are a hairstylist and somebody wants to know, you know, how to do this haircut interview, you know, just say, okay, what is the best conditioner for curly hair and why? Interview yourself, and you've got a chapter on curly hair. And then the next one can be on straight hair, and the next one can be on coarse hair, or whatever the subject. It's that easy. And then one day you just transcribe it all, give it to somebody to edit it, and you have a book. You can
and
then
we
that.
Just send it over to you to market it.
Yeah.
I really you have to get it published, but I mean there's still you have to find an agent, you have to but a lot of there are people that have wonderful books inside of them. They don't know where to start. They sit down in front of a computer and look at a blank screen and start with it was a stormy night. It was a dark and stormy night. Well, yeah, I'm sorry, but you know they don't know how to get but when you talk to them they're so filled with information that a book is in there, and people are better at when you hear people in a conversation telling you about something that they're passionate about or that they love to do, their life mission, whether it's community service or science or math or whatever, when they're talking about it, the passion comes through. When they type it, when they write a book, it's dry. So record it so you have that passion. Then
do any of you... Go ahead.
Oh, sorry.
Do any of you find that, you know, years ago you had radio, you had three stations on the television, so more of us read, you know, we grew up reading. Do you find that today that not too many people are reading as much as they used to, or recently it seems as if everybody is coming out with books?
Do you
think it's coming back?
I hear that, Michelle, that people aren't reading as much as they used to, but that certainly is not my experience. I think that book clubs are bigger than ever, and it just seems as though I've gained so many new readers in recent years that they just seem to be coming out of the woodwork, and it makes me very happy, and I especially love seeing young people reading. Twilight series has really gotten some people reading who probably weren't reading before. And I'm pretty optimistic. I think our form is going to change. It's not going to be perhaps paper books as much as e-books, but I think reading is always going to be around.
Do you feel the same way, Brian?
Well, yeah, you know, I was just going to add to that, you know, there's just so many, we got to get away from the sound bites. I mean, just the day-to-day, you know, to really find some time to sit quietly and to read and to think, you know, it's very important to do that. And I think people are starting to see the value in that more and more than, you know, than what they had in the past.
Dallas or Maggie, any comment on that?
Dallas? I definitely think that earlier people said that definitely the way that reading is coming is changing, but I definitely think reading is still a huge part of today's society, and you still need to read to sound like an educated person. I mean, it sounds really stupid to say that, but at the same time, if you don't read, you're so limited to your knowledge of life, and people have this sense of wanting to know more, and so they read more, and now that there's more books out, there's more to read, and people are coming up with new stories and new ideas and all this stuff, and everyone's so interested to see of how do I get ahead, how can I get lost in a world that's not mine, that reading has become even more prevalent than it was in the past, I believe.
And go ahead.
I'm sorry. And as these generations grow up, one thing I remember when Dallas was very young, yes, all of these Disney movies were out, but we started out with all the books because you left your child when you're reading to them the bedtime story or whatever. They
right.
picture this in their mind. They haven't seen the movie yet, so the dragon might be purple and blue and green instead of red and orange and black, or the magical forest, or whatever it is that you're reading, their imagination is creating these pictures, and that develops their brain. I mean, there's just so much involved with it, and they become readers. They start to love it, and just the fact that they can form their own picture, their own movie out of the words you're reading to them. is such an important element to growing up, to development.
That's a great point, because we do all grow up first and foremost probably being read a bedtime story prior to even getting into television. And so that's a really good point. I know that in today's world, though, with books that come out, what's better, the book or the movie first?
Mm-hmm.
Diane?
Oh, and you're asking, I'm just,
I'm not into the, I have not read Twilight, I have not read, what's the one that is huge?
Harry Potter.
Now I feel stupid.
Harry
Potter. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I have not read one of those, nor have I seen the movie. But what's bigger, the movie or the book?
You know, I think it really matters as to how well the movie is done and what kind of a person you are. I think there are some people that just don't want anybody else to tell them what that character looks like. You know, they want to imagine that character for him or herself, and so a movie's never going to have the same kind of meaning for them. So I really think it depends on how well the movie's done and who the person is viewing it.
A lot of directors and producers today are giving a heck of a lot more credence to the characters. I can at least speak from the superhero genre. I mean, having adapted, many thousands of comic books and graphic novels, I mean, if you remember the 1966 film Batman with Adam West, I mean, most people were livid when there was a rubber shark dangling off of Batman's foot off of a helicopter. I mean, they never let him live that one down. But if you've seen The Dark Knight in 2008, for which Heath Ledger won a posthumous Academy Award, I mean, it was just a fantastic film. Because it went beyond just the comic book-esque nature of it. When people went to the movie and they saw the Joker or Batman or Harvey Dent or the Commissioner Gordon, they saw themselves. And so, I think a lot of it has to do with how well the movie is done and adapted to that original premise, which, we lose ourselves in the book. And there's no replacing that.
I would have
Diane,
to...
go ahead.
Oh, no, it's okay.
Go ahead, Dallas.
Oh, I was just going to say, I have to agree. And I think that the complement of the movie and the book both being out grab readers and also viewers to view the other thing. I know so many people who, specifically with Twilight or Harry Potter, read the books, didn't want to see the movies, and then heard from other people that it was a great movie, saw it, fell in love with the movie. And I also know, on the other hand, people who were kind of opposed to reading it, who saw the movie and decided that they had to go out and instantly buy the book and read it, because in today's society, at least especially with young adults, is we realize that there's so much more within the book that you can get than you can possibly get in a movie, that in essence we want to read and see it so that we go for both of them. And I think they both complement and help each other.
Diane, you had mentioned book clubs. Do book clubs focus on... when Harry Potter comes out, do they discuss the movie genre as well, or do they just discuss the books? And did Oprah make that famous, or were there book clubs before Oprah?
Oh, I've been part of book clubs way before Oprah started her book club, but I think she's helped tremendously. And there are all the major book chains and Target, they all have, if you go to their websites, they all have book clubs. And one of my books, the summer of 2008, The Secret Life of C.C. Wilkes, was selected as a Target book club pick, and it sold in tremendous numbers. It was absolutely wonderful for my career, but even more heartening to me to see how many book club readers there are. And on my website, I let book clubs sign in, and I will call and speak to them on speakerphone when they discuss one of my books. And it's such a treat, because I get to talk to a bunch of people at the same time, and they're always so enthusiastic about discussing what it is that they're reading. So I think book clubs are alive and well, and a great way to discover writers and books that you might not other read.
Maggie, Dallas, or Brian, do you all participate in book clubs as well?
When I lived in Mexico City years ago, before when Oprah was just beginning, I lived there for 6 years. In Mexico City, it was hard to find a book. You'd have to the one store that had American books were so expensive. You know, a little paperback would be $25 or something like that. So as we went, whenever we went to the States, we all bought a stack of books, and we had a book club, and there is, we'd go in and choose a book, and, you know, we'd have book exchanges and that type of thing. And it was wonderful, and there were maybe 30 women in our club, and there were probably 20 different clubs at the time. And so I know that in other countries they have, you know, because we had the American Book Club, and then there was also the French Book Club and the British Book Club and, you know, the Panamanian Book Club and on and on and on, where people got to read them. So I know in other countries there's a lot. And here I've heard of a bunch of them, but I don't belong to one.
Brian?
Well, not unless you want to sit and talk about policy and procedure manuals. I mean, most of my experiences have been empirical, so either writing my own war stories or talking to other cops and writing theirs, it's more of an informal chat at the coffee shop or donut shop. So haven't been really heavily involved in the book
clubs. I do wonder if it's more of a something that women get involved in because it's also a social time.
Yeah.
You know,
well, I tell you what, there's an age group of about 25 to 45 year old men that just soon sit down and pop in a DVD than read a book. So,
which is sad. Diane, you've made it, known that you have rheumatoid arthritis and that you are an author that at times utilizes software product. Is that like Dragon?
That's right. Dragon,
oh, okay.
Speaking.
Mm-hmm. I had to use that early on when I was first diagnosed, and I'm sure it's come a long way since then. But for our listeners that may have those disabilities that hold them back from doing the things that they love, can you talk a little bit about that quick-like?
Yeah, I mean, it's very difficult. I was very healthy when I started writing and then suddenly was flattened and couldn't type. And as you know, it can be a very fatiguing disease, and it's very scary. So going through all of that makes writing difficult, and I had to change my writing schedule. And there was a period of about 6 months where I was just too down to do much writing. And then when I discovered the voice recognition, that really helped tremendously. I also, you and I are probably both on the more contemporary medications that are so much better than the old medications. So I rarely have to turn to the voice recognition these days. I can type quite a bit, but I know I still have it on my computer, and I know it's there if I ever need it. And yes, it has improved dramatically.
Do any of you have any kind of medical or, neurological issues that may prevent you from doing what you like at times, such as MS or rheumatoid arthritis, things of that nature, or know anybody in your line of work that may have those that prevent them doing what they are passionate about?
Well, one of the guys, the cameraman for Just Jail Fire, the head cameraman, extremely talented man, he has Parkinson's disease, and that has been very debilitating for him, and he's just an amazing talent, and looking into that brain surgery, hopefully soon, because it's more and more debilitating.
I want to piggyback off of what Dallas was saying about when you're passionate about something or you're mad about something, you just keep going. And I know that Dallas was interviewed today by Coin6 on human trafficking, and at that same time I was being interviewed by the Colombian newspaper. And you know, he was asking me some things, because a lot of my work, everybody thinks, oh, gosh, you know, she was able to, you know, get out all these press releases and stuff. But a lot of the time I do that from bed, and people don't understand that. So when they came in to shoot some photos and such in my office, which completely looks like an office by day, but by night it's a bedroom, and I was explaining to them that the one thing that gets me out of bed and stops my complaining is the fact that I am so passionate and I'm so ticked off about abductions and kidnappings and things that harm women and girls, such as human trafficking or the you know, kidnapping of many of our families that were seen on the cover of People magazine recently. So for me, I guess I have the medication. I know that if I don't take it, I'm going to be impaired for many, many hours or days to come. So I take it on a regular basis. But I know that the thing that drives me is the passion that Dallas is speaking of. And that gets me up. And it's hard for me to complain or even celebrate Thanksgiving. You know, tomorrow is a wonderful day for all of us to be thankful for. And we all have a trade that can benefit other people, whether it's reading your books or going to events like the conference coming up in January or what have you. But in reality, when you think about all the people that you're actually writing about and what they're lacking right now as far as family, friends, love, and compassion and things of that nature, that makes your trade a little bit more powerful, wouldn't you agree?
Well, it puts everything, it puts RA and any other obstacle that's in our path in perspective when you think about what other people are going through.
Definitely. Brian, I know that, you know, in the coffee shop eating a donut and things of that nature, but all of those officers, I work with a lot of FBI and especially sheriff's offices, and I know these people are no different like the rest of us. These cases take a lot out of them and you know, end up going home at night, and it's hard for them to sleep. So even though they're talking about your book and chatting over donuts, the real bottom line is these are our men and women that are on the front lines fighting this war. Is that?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, suicide and divorce is the highest among that profession, among any others. And it's very difficult to do what you do and to experience, you know, that public paradox of, hey, we need you, but just don't pull me over. It's very difficult to come home after that, you know, put your bags down and say, hi, honey, I'm home. You know, I'm here to help make dinner or put the kids down. So, so really, you know, for me, for a lot of cops out there, you have to look at your profession and your life artistically rather than, you know, from more of a dogmatic, mechanical sense. I mean, if you really identify with your essence, you know, you talk about that passion, you really escape the confines of the intellect and become free to explore basically an unbounded universe. So, you know, my call, I ask people, when you step out into the rain and open up that umbrella for others to take shelter, it's going to require you to embrace a responsibility to seek out answers on your own, you know, to suffering and injustice, and to be able to do so within a complex arena of morals, values, laws, and politics. You know, and it's going to be uncomfortable.
Definitely. Diane, any last thoughts? We have a couple minutes. Any last thoughts on the book or your journey as a writer?
Know, I'm still struck by what Dallas said about seeing a need and using whatever talent you have to meet that need. And I know that I can't go to India and start a school, but I can educate people through fiction. I want my fiction to be entertaining, but I love it when a reader says that she learned something from what I've written. And I know my values come through my fiction. And I'm going to hold what Dallas said in my heart because I really think that's such an important message.
Pretty wise lady for 17.
Yeah, she is.
Brian, any last thoughts, Dr. Kennard?
I don't believe so. I think you've all, I appreciate being on a panel with everybody. I've learned, let's just put it this way, I've learned a lot tonight, and I appreciate that opportunity to have done so.
Well, thank you for being with us. Dallas, any last thoughts?
I think we all just have to remember what Margaret Mead said once, that we should never doubt that a group of small, thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world, for indeed it is the only thing that ever has. And I think we really have to remember that, and that don't think just because you're one person you can't make a difference, because oftentimes it takes one person to put into the snowball effect into play of something huge. And so don't be afraid to get out there and to try to make a difference, because you will.
Really strong words. Maggie,
I can't stop thoughts?
I saved you for last, because I got to meet Maggie in the midst of booking Dallas for our upcoming human trafficking conference on January 9th. And when I sat down with Maggie, I thought I'd meet like a mother, you know, that is pushing her daughter. And, you know, we'd be there for coffee for about a half an hour and go. It was almost 3 hours later, and I am just in awe over you, your writings, your journey, Dallas, and the things we spoke about. So I wanted to end with any last thoughts from you, because as a publicist and somebody that is new in this demographics from L.A., this is a lot different out here in Washington State than it is in Los Angeles. I really find you very empowering. And your book, Fame 101, I can't wait to read it. But for somebody that has a daughter like Dallas and so grounded, I would think that a publicist from a publicist, you'd have some final words of wisdom for all of our panel that might need a publicist or a website or anything in the future.
As far as publicity is concerned, anybody can have it. As far as having a child like Dallas, what I did, and a lot of people have asked me, what did you do when they meet her? What I did is I didn't say no. When she said, why can't I do this? I said, how? And she said, I can do this. I said, how? And she said, well, what about this? And I said, okay. And now I think it's 1,250,000 girls have seen the film, and that we know of, and in 48 countries, and they have the tools to get away. Because I didn't say, are you kidding? You're crazy. You're only 13. I just said, how, and okay, I'll help. And so if parents, these kids are, the kids we've met, they're brilliant, and they're idealistic, and we had all that when we were that age. We lost it, as Brian said. And these kids have those ideas. Don't shut them down. Listen.
Listen,
and I think that's
kids.
The biggest thing.
Well, to our listeners, again, if you want to learn more about our panel tonight, go to Dallas Jessup. That's DallasJessup.com or justyellfire.org. You can also go to DianeChamberlain.com. You can also go to WatchmenBooks.com or also PlatformStrategy.com. And all of these individuals, once again, are listed on our website. Please take a look. Thank you for everyone being with us this evening. I wish you all a happy Thanksgiving. And, thank you. And to our listeners, you know, it's easy to dismiss, to paraphrase a quote on Brian, it's easy to dismiss heroes. It's a lot harder to be one. Are you a hero to someone? We thank you for listening this evening. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone and all of our listeners as well. Our next show is next Wednesday, December 2nd, on human trafficking. We're looking beneath the surface at the dark secret of America once again, folks. So please join us on December 2nd here on Blog Talk Radio. And I leave you with this thought. What will you do this week to make a difference? You know, what are you doing to make a difference in your community or around the world? So until we meet again, thank you again. Happy, happy Thanksgiving. Be thankful for what you have. And thank you to our panel again. You all are very inspiring, and I can't wait to read all of your books. And thank you all. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night.